Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew is once again thanking you and welcoming you for joining us here in the Fred Bertelsen Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. And this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you another rocking and ultra-exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, as I stated last week, we are back again, hooking you up with the highest quality OTR surprises that are within our powers to produce. And so we're back at it again. Without any further delays, allow me to introduce the presenter for tonight's program. And she just so happens to be an old veteran here around the accessible world and old-time radio circles. And she really needs no introduction. If you haven't guessed already, yep, you are going to be treated to a stern lesson by the MSS librarian. Yep, JJ Jackson is back at it again and doing her thing her own way. So, if everyone could just please sit back, enjoy your favorite drinks and snacks, and let's get ready to hear the program. Joy, the microphone is yours.
Thanks, Luis. Welcome to another MSS edition of Treasures Old and New from ART. Our most recent recording of a lost show is from The Saint, a gentle criminal known by his initials ST. Here is Mark Whitworth as The Saint in The High Fence.
American Radio Theater presents a recreation of a lost old-time radio show, The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. The episode is The High Fence. The daring adventures in the career of Leslie Charteris' favorite detective of fiction, radio, and motion pictures, the Robin Hood of modern crime, Simon Templar, known to millions of you as The Saint. Tonight we find Simon with beautiful Patricia Holm, the girl in his life, and the unreasonably unbeautiful Hoppy Unietz, who thinks with his ham-sized fists in his beloved automatic Betsy. They are having a belated breakfast in the dining room of the Hotel Parkside in New York City. Pat is feeling very gay as she reaches across the table and attempts to snatch the newspaper, which is forming a curtain between her and Simon Templar.
It's very impolite to read a newspaper when you're in such charming company, Simon.
You are referring to Hoppy, of course.
Hey, boss, let me see the funnies, will you?
You can have the whole paper, Hoppy.
I'll bet that breathless dame outsmarts Dick Tracy.
What were you reading, Simon?
A very interesting story. Some opportunist, whose name is as yet unknown to the police, sought a hole through the floor of an office above De La Fevre Frérissie on Madison Avenue, and waltzed gaily out the rear door with over $100,000 in sparkling jewels. A very neat job. Sorry, I didn't think of it myself.
Give me the funnies, will you, boss?
Hello, Saint.
Why, Inspector John Henry Fernack, this is a pleasant surprise. You remember Detective Inspector Fernack, Pat? Defender of truth, terror of the evildoer, the only detective with the nose of a bloodhound and jowls to match.
Of course. Hello, Inspector.
You'll pardon me if I don't stand, Inspector. My feet hurt.
Where were you last night, Saint?
How nice of you to ask. I was going to stay home and bake a cake for a friend of mine who is spending some time in Sing Sing. I had the flour and the hacksaw blades and the shortening already.
I see you were reading the story about Johnny Ainsworth picking himself up $100,000 worth of jewelry on Madison Avenue last night.
That's right, John Henry. Fascinating work. I imagine...
Johnny's been peddling his stuff to the high fence, and he was poisoned in his cell this morning, just as he was going to tell me who the high fence was.
Goodness, Inspector, are you still trying to climb the high fence?
Yes. And the commissioner figures that you're it.
Fernac, these jewel robberies have to stop. Mrs. Pryke here, who...
Madeline?
Who represents the insurance companies, has every right to expect action from the police.
This morning, Mr. Peabody of the Peabody Jewelers was called to a hotel where a wealthy Argentine and his bride wanted to pick out a diamond bracelet.
And what happened? This wealthy Argentine, whose name on the register was Señor Lopez, and his bride pick out the most expensive of 6 diamond bracelets, which Peabody himself took to the hotel. The Señor gave him a check. They have a drink to celebrate, and Peabody wakes up 2 hours later with a rubber check and no bracelets.
We'll have the man who pulled this caper in the jug in an hour, Commissioner.
It was the saint, I tell ya.
It is a typical saint crime.
If you just let me say something... I have Peabody, the jeweler, and the clerk at the Parkside Hotel who recommended him to Señor Lopez, both going through the rogues gallery right now. If this Lopez has a record, they'll pick out his picture, and I'll pinch him.
Have they seen the saint's picture?
They have. It was not the saint. Lord knows I wish it was. There's nobody I'd rather put the arm on than Simon Templar. This is where Sonny Jim Fasten is hiding out, Madeline. Please, let me do the talking. I know how to tackle crooks, and I know how to get what I want out of them.
Like you've always known how to get what you want out of the saint, Mr. Fernack.
Don't worry about the saint. I'll have him where I want him someday. Hello, Sonny Jim. Don't make any trouble. Nobody's going to hurt you. Stop trying to close that door, because my foot's in it, and I'm sensitive.
Come here, Fernack. What's it about this time, Flatfoot?
This is Madeline Pryke. She's a private detective for the insurance companies that cover those diamond bracelets you picked up at the Hotel Parkside yesterday. Peabody, the jeweler, the hotel clerk, and 3 bellboys have identified your picture, Señor Lopez.
Oh.
You still have the bracelets?
Oh, what bracelets?
Don't be obtuse. Have you sent them off to the high fence yet?
Look, you got me over a barrel. Why should I talk?
I represent the insurance company, Mr. Fasten. If you will tell us where you contact the high fence, we will not prosecute.
You mean that?
You can believe what Mrs. Pryke says, Sonny Jim. Do you want to do 10 to 20? Or do you want to sing a song? Come on, talk.
Yeah, sure. I sent the bracelets off in the mail, addressed to the high fence.
Hey!
Come on!
Did you see the killer?
Only his back.
Must have been the high fence himself. This is the second man he's killed just as they were going to talk.
Paper, get your Evening Telegraph here.
Hey, you.
Me?
Which way did that man go that just came out of here?
You must be nuts, Fatty. Nobody come out of that door for at least 5 minutes. What's the matter? Did he pinch something?
Come on, Madeline. We better get upstairs and see what's happened.
He couldn't have gotten out of the building. He must be inside here someplace.
He'll never get away with this, shooting a man right under my nose.
This is most embarrassing.
Embarrassing, huh? Oh, it's you, Saint, as I live and breathe.
The body. Fasten's body. It's gone.
Are you accusing me of being a body snatcher from the picture of the same name, John Henry?
At last. Stand up, Saint. I want you.
We'll return to the Saint in just a moment, but right here is a suggestion that will make tomorrow's supper taste extra special. Start off with Campbell's newest soup, cream of spinach.
Cream of spinach soup, Mr. Schindler? That sounds good.
It sure is. Campbell's Cream of Spinach Soup has made more friends in a shorter time than any soup ever did, because it brims with garden goodness. The spinach is the fresh, dark green kind, picked when it's crisp and tender, and filled to the tip of every leaf with flavor. And the soup is made with all of Campbell's special skill, watchfully cooked and expertly seasoned for creamy smoothness and delicious flavor.
Mmm, good! And to find something new that will help give variety to meals these days sounds wonderful.
Yes, and it tastes even better than that, as your family will soon tell you. So better ask your grocer tomorrow for Campbell's newest soup, cream of spinach, and take home a couple of cans. If he doesn't have it, he can get it for you. And you'll find tempting summer meals can be ready in a jiffy with Campbell's cream of spinach soup to help you. Why, Campbell's soup on your shelf is like a part-time cook in your kitchen. And now, back to the saint. Inspector Furnack of the New York Police and a Mrs. Madeline Pryke, a detective who represents the insurance companies who have lost several $100,000 in jewel thefts during the past few months through the efforts of a man only known as the High Fence, have just seen a cornered jewel thief by the name of Sonny Jim Fasson, alias Lopez, shot right before their eyes as he was about to divulge the address of the High Fence. The murderer ran down the stairs and disappeared. The two policemen returned to the apartment where the murder took place to find the body of Fasson had vanished and the chair where it had been resting occupied by the saint. John Henry Furnack says,
"At last. Stand up, saint. I want you."
"Hello, John Henry. What are you doing here?"
"I want to know what you're doing here."
"Who's your friend in the loud hat and that scarf?" "Really, John Henry, you should caution her about her taste in haberdashery."
"That's Madeline Pryke. She's an insurance company detective, and she's just as interested in you as I am."
"How flattering."
"So, you're the High Fence."
"I am. I wonder why Mother never tells me about these things."
"What are you doing here, Mr. Templar?"
"What a lovely voice."
"What are you doing here, Templar?"
"I dropped in to pay a call on Sonny Jim. But he doesn't seem to be here."
"Sonny Jim's been murdered."
"Well, that sounds awfully exciting. But John Henry, I blew in to see if he knew anything about some diamond bracelets that a fellow named Peabody lost this afternoon. You know I don't approve of anybody else outsmarting insurance companies, but I can't say that I thought of shooting him."
"How did you know he was shot?"
"My dear old fathead, I didn't. I merely said I didn't think of shooting him. Was he shot?"
"Yes."
"When?"
"As a matter of fact, Sonny Jim Fasson was shot in this room less than 5 minutes ago. Somebody opened the door and shot him while we were talking to him."
"Just in time to keep him from telling me where I could put the finger on the High Fence."
"You are the High Fence, Simon Templar."
"That's silly, Fancy Pants."
"I'm going to find the man that shot Sonny Jim."
"I'm sure you are, John Henry. You always do find out these things with that marvelous brain of yours."
"This man should be arrested, Furnack. He's the High Fence."
"John Henry, you're not idiot enough, even you, to pinch me for murdering a man that nobody can prove was murdered. And stealing a corpse that nobody can prove was a corpse."
"Someday, Mr. Saint, I'm going to..."
"Of course, John Henry, but this isn't the day for it. I feel the urge to move on to better company. Either break out the handcuffs, John Henry, or move out of that doorway that you fill so well sideways. I must be getting on."
"You can go now. I'll know where to find you when I want you, Saint."
"Where have you been, Simon, if I'm not being too curious?"
"Oh, I've been having a chat with John Henry Furnack, Pat, darling."
"How was John Henry?"
"I'm afraid he thinks I know who the High Fence is, and he thinks that I'm wanting to find out where this bird keeps his boodle and cash so that I can relieve him of it before he gets pinched."
"Well, for once, John Henry is right."
"You lovely thing, Pat. I can't understand where you get those ideas."
"Hoppy, how's the patient coming along?"
"He's opening his eyes, boss."
"Welcome, stranger. I want to talk to you, Fasson."
What do you want? What do you want? Who are you?"
"Templar's the name, Sonny Jim. Simon Templar."
Well, you're the saint."
"That's right."
You're the high fence.
No, you're only allowed one guess, you know.
You tried to shoot me just now.
Wrong again, brother. When I shoot people, they don't have a chance to be rude to me afterwards. You were going to tell Inspector Fernack something. What was it?
I don't know nothing.
Do I give in the heat, boss?
Not yet, Hoppy. By the way, Sonny Jim, this is Hoppy Unez. When he speaks of giving you the heat, he means twisting your arm off, or burning your feet, or some jolly little romp like that. Give his arm just a little twist, Hoppy.
Sure, boss.
Wait a minute. You're breaking my arm. You'll kill me.
Yes, that's perfectly possible. I never know what Hoppy's going to think of next. A little more pressure, Hoppy?
No. I'll talk.
Tell me something about the high fence, and I'll ask Hoppy to be reasonable.
I sent him some stuff once and waited outside the post office to see who picked it up. I pegged him and tailed him to the Cozy Corner Cafe in White Plains.
Let the nice man rest a minute, Hoppy. Go on, Sonny Jim.
This fellow that picked up the package at the post office took it to the Cozy Corner and shoved it into the pocket of an overcoat that was hanging there on the rail. I gotta get out of here.
Okay. Hoppy, show the gentleman to the door, will you?
Hey, you gonna let him go, boss?
Take him downstairs and put him in a cab.
Sometimes I don't think you know what you're doing, boss, but you always do. Come on, horse face. The boss says it's okay.
I think it would be a good idea if you stayed slightly invisible, Sonny Jim. Inspector Fernack is mad at you.
Yeah, I know.
I'll be right back, boss.
Well, that was a fascinating little tableau.
I can't tell you how glad I am that you liked it, darling. I think Mr. Fasson sang very prettily.
I gather from that smirk on your face that the information about the Cozy Corner Cafe in White Plains was exactly what you wanted.
That's right, Angel. That's exactly what I wanted. And if you'll just give me one of your better kisses, I'll tell you what I'm going to do next.
Hoppy, you okay?
Yeah, but...
Get up here!
What happened, Simon?
Somebody was parked out in front waiting for Sonny Jim to come out. They got him, Pat. He is very dead out there in the street.
Who do you suppose killed him?
It must have been our lethal playmate, the high fence. I thought this address was our own little secret, but somebody's onto it, Angel. We'll be moving on to White Plains and the Cozy Corner Cafe. Doesn't that sound revolting? This Cozy Corner cornstarch pudding, delicious, isn't it?
It tastes like those chocolate-covered rubber bones I used to buy for my dog. Boiled down to the consistency of glue, of course.
You've tried some of the strangest experiments, darling. You see that little man over there with the brakeman haircut?
Yes, why?
Well, unless I'm mistaken, that man is the high fence.
What makes you think so, Simon?
Well, he wore that camel's hair overcoat in here. See it hanging in front near the cashier's desk?
Yes.
And I just saw a young man with crook written all over his face in neon lights slip a small package into the pocket of that coat. That's what we've been waiting for, Pat. This is the main event.
He's getting ready to leave, Simon.
I feel a strange attraction toward that little man, Patricia. Come on.
He's going into that office building, Simon.
Get on the same elevator with him. Find out where he goes and what he does. I'll wait here.
All right.
Well... What did you discover, Swoon Girl?
His name is C.W. Enderby. I listened outside his office door.
How impolite of you, you wonderful woman. What did you hear?
He told his secretary, Miss Sloat, that he had a large order for diamonds to go to England by clipper tomorrow.
Excellent.
He told Miss Sloat to call the insurance company and have them send a man over to make the usual arrangements.
Beautiful. And then what?
He came out of the office and rode down on the same elevator with me. I was scared to death, Simon.
darling. Would you be shocked if I kissed you right here in the street?
Oh, Simon.
Hello? Is Mr. Enderby here?
No, he isn't.
I'm from the insurance company.
About the jewels?
Yes.
You've been quick.
I was out here in White Plains on a job. I had to ring the office from there just around the corner, and they told me to come along here. Are these the stones?
Uh-huh.
Well, if you'll finish packing them, miss, I'll just take them along now.
Take them along?
Yes, beautiful. It's a new rule. Everything of this kind that we cover has to be sealed and examined in our office and sent off from there.
Well, that's funny. Mr. Enderby's been dealing with your firm for a long time.
I'm sorry. I'll give you a receipt for them, and they're covered from the moment they leave your hands.
The value is $27,650.
Right. I'll just make you a receipt for it. Can I use this typewriter?
Certainly.
$27,650 worth of package.
What are you going to do with it, now that you have it?
I'm going to address it to one Fred Hunter, General Delivery, Hampstead, Long Island, and drop it in the mailbox. Come on, let's get back to dear old Parkside Hotel Grill. I don't like to be in the same town with the cozy corner tea shop.
Hello, Mr. Templar. The usual, sir.
Two of my usuals, please. My daughter here is thirsty.
Your daughter, indeed. Wouldn't you hate to think anybody would believe that?
Hello, Mr. Templar. I've been waiting for you.
Well, well. A sour note to the symphony. That hat is even more horrible than the last one I saw you in, Mrs. Pratt.
You know a man called Enderby?
Never heard of him. I like the name, though.
At about 3:10 this afternoon, a man entered his office, falsely representing himself to be an agent of the Northwest Insurance Company, and took about $27,000 worth of precious stones.
I can just imagine how poor Mr. Enderby must have felt.
You answer the description of that fake insurance agent, Templar. Miss Sloat, Mr. Enderby's secretary, described you perfectly. Are you coming along quietly?
Certainly not.
Come on down to the station or I'm going to use this gun, Mr. Templar.
Okay, if that's the way you feel about it.
Simon?
I'll be seeing you, darling. Don't worry. I'll be back for dinner. This toy policewoman is going to wish she died when she was little before she's through with this punch.
Taxi!
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Mr. Templar. Get in.
You're such a bossy little woman.
Drive once around the park and then to police headquarters, Center Street, driver.
Yes, ma'am.
Nice of you to take me for this ride, ma'am. I didn't think you liked me.
I want to talk with you.
How touching. Would you mind telling me, dangerous Desdemona, what is that perfume you are wearing? I want to know so I can avoid it.
What did you do with those stones you got out of Enderby's office this afternoon, Saint?
I say, lady, would you mind if I opened a window? It's dreadfully stuffy in here. That perfume you're wearing, Desdemona, it is overcoming.
I know your tricks, Saint. Leave the windows closed.
Oh. There's something funny going on, Mrs. Sprike. I'm getting sleepy. I can't keep my eyes open.
Yeah. I am getting sleepy, too. It must be...
That perfume. Familiar. Madeline? Aunt Madeline? She's passed out. Driver. Driver.
making up for a last look around, are you, see?
Yeah. I usually take a voyage at this time of year. I find it bracing for jaded nerves. Would you mind telling me what I'm doing all tied up like a birthday cake?
You're going in for some deep-sea fishing, Saint. You're gonna break the record for staying underwater. Got it?
Yeah. You are the strong-arm boy for the high fence. Did you kill Sonny Jim Fasson?
Sure. I don't mind telling you. He ain't gonna talk to anybody.
Well, of course you don't know it, Golden Boy. But when you feed me to the fishes, you also feed them $27,500 worth of diamonds.
Oh, no, we don't. Those diamonds are at the Hempstead Long Island office, addressed to Fred Hunter. General delivery. You told us all about that. The high fence has already gone there to be Mr. Hunter.
Oh. What time is it?
Almost 4 a.m.
You'll pardon me, old fellow, for being inquisitive, but what's been going on? I was gassed in that taxicab.
Sure. The high fence had that cab there waiting for you. I was driving it, and I fed that chloroform into the back seat. The high fence thinks of everything, you know it?
I'm beginning to believe it. Then the high fence gave me a drug to make me talk. That right?
Sure.
Very scientific of him. I'm surprised.
Well, it's about time for you to be going, Saint.
I hope you choke on your last breakfast on the day they hang you for this.
Sure. Come on. Yeah. This is the end of the line, old-timer. So long, Saint.
How do you feel now, Simon?
That hot toddy did it, Pat. And these dry clothes.
I'll kill the guy that did this thing. Just show him to me and I'll kill him.
Now don't be too hard on my friend. After all, if he'd been a little more of a sailor, those knots would have held. And if I'd frittered away my time learning how to make an honest living instead of studying escape tricks under the greatest escape artist since Houdini, I would have been fish food.
Oh, don't talk about it, Simon.
There's a payoff to this gimmick, ain't there, boss?
Elegantly put, Hoppy. We don't know who the high fence is, but we know where he's going, and we know the password he's going to give.
I don't get it.
Well, as long as he thinks I'm entertaining the denizens of the deep, he's going to feel perfectly safe in going to the Hempstead post office and requesting a little package at the general delivery window tomorrow morning. And I'm going to be there to watch him.
Are we going with you?
I'd like you to, but I think you'd better stay in the city. Anyone who wants to amuse himself by pumping me full of gas and dope and heave-hoeing me into the river has got to pay for his fun. And that's where you two come in. I want you to stay right here and wait for a phone call. And when that call comes in...
Yes?
Have you anything for Hunter? Fred Hunter? He's expecting a small package and sent me to pick it up.
A package, huh? Just a minute. Ah, yes, here it is, Mrs. Hunter.
Thank you.
Would you like to see a good-looking ghost, Madeline?
John Henry, here's your high fence. I told you he'd be here after his mail this morning. Or rather, she'd be here.
How did you...
How did I know? Your man on the boat told me, you pretty thing, just before he springboarded me into a closed jackknife dive into the very wet East River.
I have you covered. Mrs. Pryke, what are you doing here?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Watch it! Templar, she's got a gun! Templar, you're an idiot walking into a gun that way.
There's really nothing to it. Just a bit of judo I picked up from a lady marine I was out with one night.
To think that Madeline Pryke was the high fence. I can't believe it.
John Henry, use that magnificent mind of yours. You told me that she was at Center Street, talking with Johnny Ainsworth just before Johnny died of cyanide in his horseradish.
Yeah. And now that I think of it, she was standing back of me when I was talking to Fasten, between me and the door. She must have shot over my shoulder and slammed the door before I could turn around. Well, she's going to burn for this, Simon. By the way, I'll just take that little packet of stones, Saint. They're evidence now, you know.
Of course, old man. I was just holding them for you.
This is once, my boy, when you went to a lot of trouble and didn't make a cent. First time I ever heard of that. Too bad.
Virtue is its own reward. Now you run along, John Henry, and take that bad girl to the Bastille and see that she doesn't get away. I'll see you later. Hello, darling.
Did you get the high fence?
Sure. It was that insurance detective, Madeline Pryke. And listen, I want you and Hoppy to beat the cops to Pryke's apartment and have Hoppy shake it down. I understand there's a couple of $100,000 in cash and diamonds there. And, darling, I always charge a fee for my underwater escape trick. The Magician's Union demands it.
Before we look in again on the Saint, let me remind you to ask your grocer for Campbell's new soup, Cream of Spinach. If he doesn't have it, he can get it for you. And wait till you see how the family go for it.
Well, we like spinach, and we like cream soups, Mr. Schindler.
And you'll surely like Campbell's Cream of Spinach Soup, Mrs. Schindler. It's so creamy smooth, so delicately seasoned, and so filled all through with garden-fresh taste. Campbell's, you see, make it from only the finest garden spinach, picked when it's crisp and deep green, then washed and washed until the water runs crystal clear. Then they carefully blend this tender young spinach into the smoothest, creamiest puree imaginable, gently cooked to retain all of the garden goodness.
Mmm, good!
Mmm, good is right. And think what a help Campbell's Cream of Spinach will be with your summer meals. It's the perfect one hot dish to have with salads and other cool supper dishes. And bowls of Cream of Spinach soup and sandwiches make the very best sort of lunch. Yes, ladies, you can build many tempting and easy summer lunches and suppers around Campbell's newest soup, Cream of Spinach. The family will be delighted. And remember, Campbell's soup on your shelf is like a part-time cook in your kitchen.
He's just a boy. How hard did you bop him, Hoppy?
I just give him a little pat on the bean, boss.
Everybody hasn't got as thick a skull as yours.
Gee, do you think he's dead, boss?
Don't know. I'd better feel his heart and find out. Hoppy!
What's the matter, boss?
This time we certainly did win something. Look!
Hey, boss! A beautiful dame! Ah, gee, you always get all the luck.
Yes, Hoppy. And I have a feeling we'll need it in the case of...
The Unlicensed Victualers. You've been listening to a recreation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater, The Saint. And the episode was called The High Fence. This show had originally been broadcast on June 20th, 1945. Produced and directed by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Mark Whitworth as Simon Templar, the Saint, with Ken Leese as the Commissioner and the Clerk, Joy Jackson as Mrs. Sloat, Magpie McLaurin as Patricia, Pat McNally as Sonny Jim, Liz Roach as Madeline Pryke, Chuck Royalty as Detective Inspector Fernack, Kim Turner as Hoppy, Nick Richa as Quincy the Cabbie, other roles by Karen Leese and Beth Schlansky. I'm Dan Schindler, your announcer. This is ART, the American Radio Theater.
For my next show, I wanted to hear a recreation from a convention way back in 1997. The original recording of it exists, and some of the original actors are in this recreation. But they're in different places. We take you to Escape and the story of Wild Jack Rhett, starring Larry Dobkin, as directed by Herb Ellis.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape!
Escape with us now to the Old West and the unusual story of a merciless professional killer, as Ernest Haycox tells it in Wild Jack Rhett.
Red Mesa, little town springing out of the hot, dry prairie beside the Chisholm Trail. A saloon, a hotel, two general stores, and a tiny church where the decent citizenry might pray for salvation, while the wilder element, trail drivers, teamsters, buffalo hunters, restlessly searched out friend and enemy along the dusty main street. A small hill rose on the western edge of Red Mesa, plagued with a rash of graves, some marked and cared for, others sinking and forgotten.
Man that is born a woman hath but a short time to live, and is full of misery. He cometh up, and he's cut down like a flower. He flieth, as it were, a shadow. While we're praying, a couple of boys, why don't you start throwing some dirt on the sheriff? O Lord, with whom do live the spirits of them be dead, and in whom the soul prevails, we say that...
That same evening, a committee of the leading citizens of Red Mesa gathered together at Mayor Wayne's home to decide upon a new sheriff.
All right, gentlemen, sit down, sit down. Let's get this settled. Gentlemen, to make this town a decent place for our women, folk, and children, we've got to get a sheriff Todd Mallon and his kind can't kill. We need the toughest gunfighter available. And I want to propose...
Minute. Mayor Wayne, let me speak.
All right. Go ahead, Bo Hallen.
I don't think we should get all upset just because we lost another sheriff. Jim Speed worked out fine for Red Mesa. All we need is another sheriff just about like him.
Yeah, I expected that, Bo Hallen. All you look out for is keeping that saloon of yours full of anybody who'll buy whiskey and gamble. I still propose we reform this town by sending for a man some of you may have heard of. Jack Rhett.
Jack Rhett. Have you heard of Jack Rhett? Who never heard?
Gentlemen, I do want my saloon full and full of the only men who bring any money into Red Mesa. Cowpunchers coming up the Chisholm Trail with Texas cattle. Thirsty men on the prod from a long drive. Well, if you give them Jack Rhett instead of a little fun, this town will go broke.
We'll chance that, Bo Hallen. We'll chance that.
What about Matt Tavernan? Now, what's he got to say?
I got nothing to say, gentlemen. As U.S. Deputy Marshal for the district, my job is strictly outside Red Mesa. You run your town the way you like, I'll handle the surrounding territory.
You know anything about Jack Rhett, Tavernan?
No, just by reputation. Professional town tamer. And I've heard he's the most cold-blooded killer ever drew a gun.
Travner's right. We can't have a man like that.
All right, all right. Put it to a vote, gentlemen. All in favor of sending for Jack Rhett, raise your right hand.
Raise your right hand. Raise your right hand.
5-1. Matter settled, gentlemen. Good night.
All right.
Okay.
Now, still waiting to see Mary, Travner?
If you don't mind, Mayor.
Yeah, of course. Sit down.
All right.
Keep out a minute.
Thank you.
Well, Bo Hallen's pretty mad. After Jack Rhett's here for a while, at least there'll be less gunfighting.
There'll be less anyway if Todd Mallon were out of the way. He sets a bad example. He's a hard man to catch.
Well, you've done all you can, Travner. There's just too much territory around here for Mallon and his gang to lose themselves in. He'd have to be taken by a town officer, and I think Rhett is a man to do it. Now, if Mallon comes to town again...
Oh, he'll come, Mayor. Word gets out that Rhett is sheriff here. Mallon will have to face him or lose his reputation with his own men. Wow.
Good evening, Father. Hello, Matt.
Good evening.
Hello, darling.
Well, Matt Travner, aren't you going to kiss me?
Well, yes, of course, sure. Here you are.
Mary, what a shameless wench you are.
Father, you're old-fashioned. After all, we're engaged.
Your mother, God rest her soul, didn't behave like that when we were engaged.
The war changed things, Father.
Yeah, I know. I know. But not for the better. Well, I'm off to bed. Don't stay up too late now. Good night.
Good night, Mayor.
Good night, Father. Matt, you look worried.
Do I?
Tell me about it.
Well, it's just that they're sending for a new sheriff, a legal killer named Rhett. He has quite a reputation, and there'll always be men to challenge it.
That means more gunfighting, is that it?
I'm afraid so. It's a bloody way to peace, Mary.
I know. Let's not worry about it now. Come on, I'll fix some coffee for us.
Weeks later, Wild Jack Rhett rode into the Red Mesa. He was 38 and at the peak of his reputation. He stood well over 6 feet, better than 200 pounds of plain sinew. Tawny blonde hair grew long in the frontier style, and his features, fair and tinted like a girl's, were boldly aquiline. He was a picturesque man until one looked at his eyes, which were large and pale blue, and had the disconcerting trick of remaining too steadily on people. There was to be seen in him a suggestion of inhumanity. He sent word to the committee that he'd meet them at the mayor's office that evening.
Hey, it's 8 o'clock now. Where is he?
Well, he's in town, and that's bad enough.
Oh, be a sport, Bo Hallen. We took a fair vote on Rhett.
Hey, here he comes now.
My name is Jack Rhett. I have your offer.
I'm Peter Wayne, Mayor of Red Mesa. You accept it?
Well, it depends on what you want. Tell me.
Well, Rhett, it's a difficult town. Chisholm Trail lies just across the river. We get most of our money from the riders passing through with Texas cattle. Now, we want them to have a decent time for their money, but we don't like a lot of gunplay and killing.
I've always been accustomed to complete authority, Mayor. I presume to know my job, and I won't have interference.
That's agreed, Rhett. Oh, by the way, the last sheriff had a rule that riders leave their hardware at his office.
Huh.
He had trouble enforcing it.
It's a poor rule. Let them pack their guns.
That gives the wild ones a fair chance at you.
I never give a man a fair chance at me. Is that all, gentlemen?
Bo Helen's saloon was a usual dance hall with a huge bar along one side of the room and gaming tables toward the rear. Next morning, Bo Helen stood tapping the mahogany of the bar with his fingertips, staring thoughtfully at nothing.
Morning, Bo Helen.
It's noon, Seamus.
Huh? Oh, sure, sure. Hey, draw me a beer, Mike. Say, where's the new sheriff, Bo Helen?
It's over there at the corner table. Came in just before you did.
Uh-huh.
Barkeep, a cigar and a glass of rye.
Yeah. Now he's going to clean and reload his 6 guns, one at a time.
By golly, he is. How'd you know?
It's an old gunman's trick to impress the citizens.
Yeah, but there's no one here except you and me.
Then it's to impress me.
Goodbye, Bo Helen. Mike.
Got something to say to me, Bo Helen?
Yes. Yes, I have. You're smart, Rhett. I recognize that. But your record for killing is too severe, and my business depends on open town. Now, the reform element got you, and I'll go along for now. But just remember one thing. I can break you, Rhett, any time.
I was waiting for that, Boylan.
Well, then
I guess we understand each other.
Hello.
Any luck, Matt?
Just the morning's ride.
Matt, here's Jack Rhett. Rhett, this is Matt Travner, U.S. Deputy Marshal for this district.
Glad to know you, Rhett.
You're young.
Don't be misled. Look, Rhett, your job is in town, and mine is everything outside. So I'll either back you up here in Red Mesa or leave you strictly alone.
I'll handle Red Mesa.
All right. One more thing. I want Todd Mallon. If he comes to town again, he'll have to be taken. Now, will you do that or shall I?
What is he?
Outlaw. His main line is plain robbery. And now I want him for killing Jim Speed.
Let me handle Mallon.
Why?
Killing's my trade. Man doesn't live with enough animal instinct to get me.
Maybe. Killing you would build a man's reputation considerable.
Oh, just so.
Well, good luck, Rhett.
It was peace for a full week in Red Mesa. And then on Saturday night, Matt Travner's prediction came true. Jack Rhett was at his customary post just opposite Bo Helen's saloon in a chair on the porch of the Chinook Hotel. Obscured by the shadows and watching the crowd, his cold, pale eyes half concealed by cigar smoke, trouble found him thus.
Evening, Sheriff.
Oh, good evening, ma'am.
Oh, you keeping an eye on the boys,
huh? Is this Rhett to you, be it Abilene? Where's he hiding? Hey, where's this brave man, Wild Jack Rhett? Bring him on!
Hello, cowboy.
That's a lot of killing for one sheriff. Three men. I don't like it.
Forget it, friend. Have a drink and forget it.
You're Bo Helen, ain't you?
That's right. Come on now, have one on the house. Hey, Mike, fix him up here.
I can pay for my liquor.
Yes.
Never gave him a chance. What kind of a sheriff you got stands in the shadows and kills one man and then jumps 50 feet from his gun flash and shoots down two more? Those boys never had a chance at it. Yeah.
Drink your drink, cowboy.
It was the most merciless killing I've ever seen. He's a butcher. I wish I'd...
Shut up! This is my game. They were fools to play it. You never buck a man who spent his life learning to kill, son. Get out of town. Get out now.
Red... What if I don't?
Oh, don't try it, son. Don't let your anger destroy you. Drift. Go on. Drift.
Yeah, blast your town. I can hold my thirst another 200 miles up the trail. Come on, boys. We'll send word back to Texas to go round Red Mesa. Let it go to dry like powder.
It won't do, Rhett.
It will do, Bo Helen. Barkeep, bring me a glass of rye. On the house.
Rhett stood with his back to the bar, holding his drink and a thin black cigar carefully in one hand. He stood there for about 10 minutes, and trouble came again.
Hey, Todd Mallon's coming in with four men.
Close up the game.
Yeah.
Open up the back doors. Well, Jack Rhett, now let's see you shoot down Todd Mallon. And four men from the shadows.
Good night, Bo Helen.
When word came to Bo Helen's saloon that Todd Mallon was riding into Red Mesa with four men, Jack Rhett simply walked out, crossed the street to his office, sat down, and waited. 20 minutes later, Todd Mallon had arrived and departed, not a shot fired. Then Jack Rhett went quietly to bed. But early Sunday morning, he was back in his office.
Come in.
Morning, Rhett.
Well, Travner?
There's talk, Rhett.
Yeah, I expect that.
Now, Rhett, you told me you'd handle Mallon if he came to town.
Yes, Travner.
Well, they say Mallon rode into town last night with four men. Rode right up to this office, got down, came inside.
Yeah.
And that you and he stood here with this desk between you talking, and that a few minutes later, Mallon left and rode out of town.
I play this game my own way, Travner. I don't want interference from anybody.
People are saying that maybe you and Mallon made a deal or something.
What's going on? Well, now, somebody breaking the Sabbath. You know who that could be, Travner?
No, I don't.
That's a rifle. Sounded like one of those seven-shot Spencers.
Well, then that's old Hack Crow.
Hack Crow?
Yeah, he's an old trapper, comes to town every few months, sells his furs, gets drunk, goes a little crazy. Jim Speed always laid him away in jail to sober up.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, you better stop him, Red.
He's only got two shots left. That'll satisfy him. I doubt he'll reload.
And if he notices us and decides to shoot...
Well, then I'll have to kill him.
Oh.
Hey, who's that? Who's that coming out of Bohelens?
That's Ewald Bay, gambler.
Oh, he's a fool.
He's getting on his horse. You're going to stop him, Rhett?
No, I don't know.
Rhett, the town is your territory, and I won't interfere. But why did you refuse a fair shot at Hack Crow? Ewald Bay is dead.
Which is the more useful citizen, Travner? Crow or Bay? Eh? The West is full of gamblers.
There was considerable talk that day in Red Mesa over Jack Rhett's aloof and cruel calm in condemning a shooting that had occurred under his very eyes and within reach of his formidable guns. Then mid-afternoon, a rider came up from the prairie and reported finding old Hack Crow dead in a coulee, dry-gulched and robbed. Mayor Wayne heard about it, went to Bohelen's saloon to hear more.
Good evening, Mayor.
Hello, Helen. Hello, Brandy.
Well, what do you think of your great Jack Rhett now, Mayor?
Looks bad.
Now, look, Mayor. Everyone knew Hack Crow carried his profits in his pocket. He always did that. So Rhett allowed him to leave, and Todd Mellon and his men were waiting for him out in the coulee. It's as simple as that.
You have no proof of that, Bohelen.
No, then why didn't Rhett take Mellon when he rode in here last night? Because they made a business arrangement, that's why.
Well, it doesn't look good, but... Shh. Hey, there's Rhett now.
Barkeep, glass of rye.
I don't want to talk to him yet. I'm leaving. Good night, Bohelen.
Good night, Mayor. Hey, Mike, give me that rye. I'll take over the sheriff myself. Here's your drink, Sheriff. Mind if I sit down?
The game never changes, Bohelen. I know what you're going to say.
I warned you. I could break you, Rhett.
It's an old story to me. Every town has got one insider who plays along with the outlaws. And I knew you to be that one here when I first saw you. Running the saloon, you'd know when a cattle buyer was riding out of town carrying specie, when the Overland stage was loaded with gold. And there was a quarrel over the split of profit between you and Mallon, and you fell apart. Always the way.
Very shrewd, Rhett.
Well, it's an old story, Bohelen. I know it by heart.
Very shrewd. But you can't play the same game.
Oh? All sheriffs are supposed to be crooked.
You and Mallon had an agreement, a little chat last night. Did he make you a good offer, Rhett?
Maybe I should accept his offer, Mallon. Just to keep you two split. Maybe I should do that.
Rhett, I've seen sheriffs come and go. It's a chancy trade.
Yeah, sheriffs die. They all die. Only a question of time.
Well, you're a hard one, Jack Rhett.
You might make your peace with Mallon. It would have to be that way. Otherwise, you'd have little chance of getting rid of me, Bohelen.
It may be that way.
I wouldn't be surprised. I always expect the worst in men. I'm seldom disappointed.
It was turning dark as Jack Rhett left Bohelen's saloon.
Crossing the street, he walked into his office and continued on out through the back door. A few minutes later, he stood in the gathering shadows opposite the OK stable and watched Bo Helland ride out and drift into the prairie to the south. He knew now what to expect. It would happen soon, perhaps tomorrow. He returned to his office and slept the night there.
Come in.
Well, morning, Rhett. I want you to meet Mary Wayne.
Miss Wayne, I'm very proud.
I wanted to know you.
To meet him, Mary, not to know him. Rhett lives in a closed world.
You see that, ma'am? I have no friends.
Well, we're to be married on Thursday, Mr. Rhett. I'd sure like you to be there.
I'd be most happy. Thank you.
Mary, would you wait outside? I've got some business to discuss with the sheriff.
Of course, Matt, but don't be long. Goodbye, Mr. Rhett.
Goodbye, Miss Wayne.
Bye. Rhett. This afternoon, I'm leaving to find Todd Mallon. You had your chance, but you let him go.
Wait. Trampner, wait.
No. I've tried patience, Rhett, and I'm a poor hand at it.
Trampner, you have a fine girl. If it's not presuming, let me congratulate you. Compliment her.
Why, thank you. Thank you. Was that all?
I will take care of Mallon. Give me a little time. That's my job.
Rhett, I want to believe you.
Well, no man wearing a star should believe anybody. It's a weakness. Haven't I told you?
Blessed if I quite understand you, Rhett.
Well, understand this. Every man has his time. He knows it. Nothing makes any difference. You just finish and go out.
You're the man who never believes in luck. You want help with Mallon?
Oh, I have no faith in help.
Matt?
Coming, Mary.
Now wait, Trabner. I will suggest this much. You take one man and ride due north to where the cattle trail crosses Tempest Creek and be there tonight. Understand?
Red, I'd hate to oppose you.
Well, if you did, you'd lose. I've been 15 years at this, eh? Which is 5 years beyond average luck.
That evening, Jack Rhett took up his post at the porch of the Chinook Hotel dressed in his best. Hard white shirt, blood red Windsor tie, and a suit of black broadcloth swimming around the big, uncompromising shoulders. He sat there calm behind the smoke of his cigar, waiting.
Well, full moon tonight, Sheriff.
That's right.
No offense, mind you, no offense.
Good evening, Rhett.
Oh, hello, Mayor Wayne. Mayor, have you seen Trabner?
He rode north this afternoon. Back tomorrow, he said.
Oh, good.
Hey! Where's the sheriff?
Here I am.
Rhett, listen. I just come up from South Creek. And Todd Mallon and six men were about a quarter mile behind me, heading into town.
Oh, all right, friend. You take cover.
Yeah, sure.
Rhett stood up and moved into the shadow at the end of the hotel porch. Across the street, Bo Helland appeared in the full glow of the doorway of his saloon.
Come out of the dark and meet your friends, Jack Rhett. What are you afraid of? It's only Mallon riding in to see you.
Thieves fall out, but the urge for profit brings them together again.
You should have known it, Rhett.
Nothing surprises me.
Well, oh, there you are, Rhett. Surprised to find you exposing your great reputation out there in the middle of the street.
Every man has his time. You want to try, Bohelan, or will you wait for help?
I'll wait.
The arriving horses came up into the moonlight street and halted at the corner of the saloon. Bohelan's hand lifted toward the group, and at that order,
The horsemen spread out until they were flank to flank all across the street. Todd Mallon advanced from the line and stopped square and alert above the saddle. Jack Rett stood alone in the middle of the street, his eyes flashing a hard jury. Then he dropped his cigar and ground it beneath the boot. It was a final gesture.
How are you, Mallon? Goodbye, gentlemen.
Next day, Red Mesa buried some more men out on the hill and talked to Jack Rett. It was more of a mystery to them now than when living. All of them but one, Matt Travner.
Nobody knows the killer's world, Mary. Wasn't any much room there in Jack Rett for pity. He sent me away to save me from what he knew was coming. And I think that was a kindness, although I had no fear.
It was a fine thing for him to do, Matt. But they say he stood in the middle of the street and faced them all in the moonlight. Why? It wasn't his style.
Well, as long as he was sure of himself, he never gave anybody an even chance, Mary. But killers live and die by instinct, and somewhere along the evening, he got that warning. And after that, it was just a matter of pride. He killed Mallon and Bo Helen before he died, standing up and in good style. And that's sort of a greatness, isn't it?
Under the direction of Herb Ellis, the radio enthusiasts of Puget Sound have brought you Escape's Wild Jack Rett by Ernest Haycox, especially adapted for radio by John Meston. Jack Rett was played by Larry Dobkin, with Herb Ellis as Matt and Merrill Mail as Bo Helen. Harry Bartell was the narrator. Featured in the cast were Tyler McVeigh, Larry Albert, Doug Young, Bill Brooks, Norma Jean Nilsson, Ginny Tyler, and Peggy Jordan. Your opening narrator was Christopher Conrad, son of radio legend Bill Conrad. And I'm Art Gilmore. The special music for Escape was composed by Ivan Ditmars and performed by Esther Geddes. Sound effects were done by Ray Erlenborn and Stuart Conway. Sound engineering by Dave Dindenfass, Donald Zonker, and Joy Jackson.
That's all the time I've got for today. Please have a listen to our website, www.americanradiotheater.org, for more podcasts. And a reminder to join us for our Old Time Radio Marathon. That's April 30, Saturday, right here on radioatofthepast.org. 9 a.m. Pacific, that's noon Eastern, to 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. radioatofthepast.org in the Fred Bertelsen Room. Hey, see you there!
Okay, Joy, thank you very much, and great work. You set them up, now it's my turn to knock them down. Well, folks, it is that time again when we unfortunately have to wrap things up and shut it down and close up the studio for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. But don't worry, I've said it before, and I will keep saying it again and again. We will be back again next week. All you need to do is come back and join us. You know where, you know when, and you know how. As always, if you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, please address them to the honcho of MSS, Miguel Amaro, MSS Director. He can be found at michaelmelli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and you know it. Goodbye.